Hello everyone, my name's Jess and this is part two of our special two-part episode of Better Than Bad. In part one, I was joined by Taylor to discuss the films Bridget Jones's Diary, Dumplin' and Good Luck to You, Leo Grande, and we spoke about how they discuss and present women's bodies and beauty standards. In this part, I'll be joined by returning guest Zoe and we'll be using the previously mentioned films as a springboard to discuss the issue from a more industry-focused lens. For those who don't know, Zoe and I are actors and we have had our own experiences throughout our training and our careers. And throughout this discussion, we'll be drawing on our own experiences and discussing what we think should change in the industry. I know this is a breakaway from the usual film-based discussions we have on this podcast, but I hope you'll stick around and hear what we have to say. As before, I want to remind you all that our experiences will vary from people outside of our own race, gender, and sexual identity. While my guests and I take a moment to focus on our own experiences, I encourage everyone to research the effects that this issue has on people outside of their own experiences. As always, this is an open discussion, so please feel free to reach out at BetterBadPod on Twitter and Instagram. Finally, I want to reiterate part one's trigger warning. To anyone who suffers from any form of body image related issues, please proceed with caution as there will be discussions surrounding topics that may be triggering to you. Welcome, Zoe.
Oh, hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm good, actually. Very tired. I forgot that we don't live in a lockdown per usual. How are you?
I'm good. I've had a lovely day off and now I'm ready to just sit, discuss the problems with this industry that we love, talk about some films here and there, set the world to rights, basically every conversation that we ever have.
Yeah, basically. I was just about to say that.
So we talk about the industry a lot because we're both involved in it, and it's one of those sort of things where there's lots that's wrong with it, there's lots that's right with it, and we could go on for hours just talking about each individual thing. We will probably go on for hours talking about this particular issue. So obviously this two-part special is surrounding the way that women's bodies and beauty standards are represented in media and how they're portrayed. We're focusing more on body image because that's something that personally for me is quite an important issue to discuss. I asked you to come onto this show because I kind of knew that you'd have a lot to say.
Shocker. I mean, when do I not?
And I assume that had I asked you and you had nothing to say, that you would have been like, nope, this isn't for me. So I did want to just start this off by asking, like, why is this particular issue really important to you?
I mean, the irony is I think you could have asked anybody to come and have this discussion with you who is, you know, in a body that society considers female, will have something to say if they are working as an actor about their relationship with their body and their job, because it's so unable to be divorced. And that's something you're kind of told from the get-go. It's something you're told to be mindful of even from the age of when you're, you know, auditioning for drama schools. And please remember, when people are auditioning for drama schools, they're 17, they're children. So what we do is we say to these young girls, okay, you've got to think about your body as you're thinking about your job. And that's kind of singular. Like, I mean, how many, it does come into other industries, but how many others are like that, apart from modelling, maybe?
Yeah, and the music industry, I think, to a certain extent. But these are all sort of entertainment-based industries that really fall into this, like, trap of hyperfixating on what you look like. And it's so right when you say that this is something that happens from, like, the get-go. And we'll get on to like our own drama school experiences a little bit later on, but it is something that you are told so consistently to, you know, be mindful of what you look like because it will play into what roles you get. And it's really difficult as just like a person to be able to separate who you are from what you look like in general in this just society that we live in. But then when you put that into this career and this industry, it becomes even more difficult to separate it, because you, in normal everyday life, a lot of people will put their beauty and their body and everything as part of you know,
their worth. But with acting, music industry, modelling, it's also directly affects your income.
Yeah, it's a business case, isn't it? Basically, yeah. People are putting a number on something that it's somebody's body. They're putting a number on your body. They're putting a price on your body, and they are equating it with, you know, a bountiful number of roles or a very limited number of roles, and or roles of a certain age, and or roles of a certain attractability. And I think as well within that, as because we live in the society we live in, both the body and the idea of its sexuality is not divorced. It comes as a package deal. So it's kind of like, okay, so we're putting this price on a body, but then we're also putting this price on this individual's sexual appeal as well. Mm-hmm. At the age of...
And it is one of those things where, like, the typecasts and the lack of diversity of sizes on our TV screens, in our cinemas, on our stages, I think it not only affects actors and the way that they view themselves, and I don't think it just even affects like audiences in the way that they view themselves. I think it affects the way that they view other people as well.
Yeah,
and directly impacts this very toxic kind of mentality that's in place, where everybody, you know, if someone's over a certain size, they feel like they can comment on their body. And I think it all kind of molds into one thing. And I don't think it's necessarily fair to just blame film, TV and theatre and, you know, music and all of that for this. I think there's probably a bigger issue at hand.
I don't think it stands alone I think it stands in silo from those bigger diversity issues. I think it's a symptom of those bigger diversity issues. And I think that what this unrealistic expectation of a female body, but also a male body, but also, you know, those are two kind of different conversations to a certain extent, but it is from this what I would call male gaze perspective. It is from ensuring that everything fits into that particular standard. And once those bigger issues of representation on screen are addressed, I do believe that this sort of different sizes we see on screens will change. But I also just want to pick up on the point of the sizes we see on screen. I don't think anybody does think that they are normal, in quotation marks. And actually, this is something that I've found really difficult. And I have to remind myself that every single body I see that's presented as a normal body is actually in reality very, very small. And those individuals have a personal chef, they have a personal trainer, they have a whole routine and rigor to their lives that is not normal, you know. It's not the everyday person's life.
Yeah,
but it's kind of presented as thus.
When, you know, you say a body that's presented as quote unquote normal on screen and is actually quite a small build. There's a really great video by the YouTuber, her name's Mo Black. I will link it in the description for people. And she talks about this in reference to the TV show Euphoria and how there's a role in that played by Barbie Ferreira, who is presented as this plus size character. Mo Black goes into it in much more detail, but this basically that her actual dress size is no larger than a size large in America, which would roughly be about probably a size 16 or 18 over here.
Depending on the shop as well.
A
large in Zara is not a large at Next, for example.
True. And how, because she's bigger than these very skinny women, it presents her in as being bigger than she actually is. But it was quite an interesting video. And there was also another interview I saw with Nicola Coken, I think her last name, that's how you say her last name, from Derry Girls, and how she was sort of painted as the bigger one of the group. But when she filmed season one, she was a UK size 10.
I know, this is so mad. And I was thinking about, you know, in Devil Wears Prada, when there's the scene and she's like, no, I'm a size 4 now, or whatever, size 6 down to size 4. What? Like,
yeah,
she's clearly much less than a size 4 all the way through that film. Like, it's just mad. So mad.
It's just very weird when you see it and then you actually start thinking about it. And for me, like, if we're going to jump straight in with, like, referencing an experience of mine, I remember auditioning for a film. I won't say what the film is, but I remember auditioning for a film. It's for the lead role. And the role was basically described, the character description was overweight teenager. And at the time that I auditioned for this, I was a UK size 10. And I remember seeing that and being like, what? There's no way. What? And it kind of spiraled me ever so slightly. But I thought genuinely in my own little naive brain, I thought I'd rock up to the audition. I'd probably be one of the smallest girls there. They'd take one look at me and be like, oh, no, you're not the right size for this, because I was not overweight in any way, shape or form. And I turn up to the audition and every girl who's in that waiting room is the same size as me. We are all the same size. Some are even smaller than me. And there's that kind of, you know how usually in a waiting room for an audition, you're all chatting, or you're like, oh, how far have you traveled? There was none of that. It was just this kind of like weird silence of, I think everyone had the same thought. And then I got a recall for it and I was like, huh, I don't get it. And I ultimately didn't get it, clearly. But I remember thinking to myself, okay, this is where this industry has placed me. At a size 10, a UK size 10, they have placed me as the overweight character.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is maddening, because I suddenly started thinking about the fact that this was, A, the character was a teenager. And I thought, what if some 16-year-old girl watches that film and she is bigger than me and she sees this character who's a size 10 prodding her stomach, lifting up her jumper, looking at her. Her whole character arc was that she wanted to lose weight. She was so desperate to lose weight. And they see a smaller body than them. And I just thought, that's so damaging on so many, beyond it being damaging for me, it's damaging for all these audiences. That was like a really like big turning point in terms of like the way I looked at the industry, because I suddenly, I'd always known these things. It'd been drilled into me from training. But it was like the first time that I like fully saw it in action and was like, it's a really weird sensation when that happens, because you're just like, well, what am I supposed to realistically do?
Well, that's it. And like, it's a conversation I have with myself consistently. I doubt whether or not this is a big one. You ready? Strap in, click in. I doubt whether or not I am truly committed to being an actor because I don't want to lose weight. I know, but it's something I turn over on my mind. And then I watch things and you know, I think, well, if I really wanted that role, I probably do need to do that. And I do need to make my body look like that. So because I don't want to make my body look like that, does that then mean that I am less hungry, I am, you know, less committed to my professional development? Isn't that mad?
And it's like, where do you go with that thought? Like,
yeah, exactly. Well, good question.
Strap in for the therapy session. But I've had this, I wrote a piece that I published on Medium about this issue, and I sort of posed the question of like, what realistically, what is the option if you are above a size 10? Which, can I just say, when I was at drama school, I genuinely had a tutor turn round and say, if you are above a UK size 10, then you need to either lose weight or gain it to play the fat roles. Those were the two, that was literally the two options that he gave. But then when you see that the supposed fat roles are going to people who are a size 10 and below, you know, whether that be that's because they view them as being fat or they put them in a fat suit, you're then like, okay, well, actually, what is the option here? Is it to not get work or is it to lose? Are those the only two options?
Well, exactly. And I, you know, if I was to, at this, you know, I am a size 8, size 10. If I was to want to lose weight, that's what I would have to do at this point.
And it's mad to me that you think that you're not dedicated to your career because you won't lose weight when you're a size 8 to 10. Like, that's such a normal, like, regular size. Like, there is no need for concern at all. There isn't even really need for concern when you're anything else. Like, it's no one else's fucking business, to be completely honest. But it's so crazy to hear, like, oh, you know, if I was really dedicated to my own career, I'd lose some weight. You're a size fucking 8. Like, that's so weird. I don't blame you for thinking that because of my own experiences, but it is so baffling when you hear stuff like that. And you hear it all the time. All the time through training, all the time talking to friends who are actors. It's a constant thing of this battle in your mind of like, oh, do I need to change my entire appearance in order to simply do the thing that not only do I love, but that I'm actually fucking good at? I can act.
Yeah. And I remember that feeling coming in my third year of drama school. I can remember that feeling coming. I can remember people being surprised that I can dance. A bit of background of me. I was a cute little ballroom dancer when I was, I don't know what age, but I did it for quite a while. They used to be surprised that I could dance really well. I remember wondering why I was always cast as the older roles in those drama school plays.
Yes.
And I now, upon reflection, know that it's because I'm not tiny. That's why. And I have a pair of breasts. But not even just like, 40 years. So the youngest I was cast... Are you ready for this? The youngest I was cast in my third year was a 42-year-old. I was cast as a 60-year-old. Yeah, for real. I'm 27, guys. I'm 27. Yeah.
The youngest was a 40-year-old.
With a teenage daughter.
Eh?
It's really quite funny, isn't it? So here's what's interesting about this kind of idea of a female body. And I think it was because, I'm going to make some jumps here, I'm going to make some leaps that aren't necessarily true, and the individuals who cast those plays may say something different. I think it's because we've got an unconscious bias towards weight being something that happens to a woman who isn't seen as, you know, desirable. And we equate that idea of a woman not being desirable as a woman as being older. So that kind of link there is made in somebody's mind, and that's what inspires somebody to cast me as a 62-year-old woman. Scottish woman, I may add.
God. It does happen a lot though, where like if you're curvier, and I like not even like plus size, just like,
yeah, just curvy
on you,
yeah
then you are automatically cast in these like very particular roles. I don't know about you, how many times, I bet you've heard this a lot because I've heard it a lot, how many times have you been said, once you get to 30 you won't stop working?
Oh my gosh, all of the time.
Day I hear that line, and it's like, once you get to 30. And I know what it means. It's that idea that when you're in your 20s, you play the desirable person and well, and that's kind of it. It's like the ingenue, no one else. And that's what they mean by that. It's like once you get to 30, you're kind of bigger because you don't fit into this stereotype. It's one of those really frustrating things to hear, because when you're in your 20s, you're like, I mean, I was hearing this when I was like 21, fresh out of drama school. They're like,
yeah,
what do you mean I have to wait?
So here I am twiddling my, twiddling.
Yeah,
my
I've got to twiddle my thumbs for 10 years. Like, yeah. And you are, your cast as the older characters, the character roles, again, put that in quotations, character roles, comedy roles tend to be like given to you. I remember being told constantly, you're really good at comedy. And sometimes I wonder whether I was actually good at comedy or whether it was just because I wasn't like a stereotypical beauty. It's a really weird thing, particularly when you're training, because I think drama schools have a very weird responsibility, because they have to train you for the industry, but they in turn perpetuate industry standards. And it's a weird space where I almost can't fully blame them for doing that, because if you were to allow people to be blissfully unaware and then just release them into this industry, it would honestly destroy people if there wasn't a small sense of understanding that this industry has its shit moments, and that you are going to be judged for what you look like or judged for certain things. And so I can't sit there and fully go, they should not be saying this ever. But sometimes you look at what they do say and you go, did you have to word it like that? Did you have to really pull people down like that? There are times where, like, you know, I literally was told once by a tutor in a pub, no less, and he turns around to me and he goes, don't worry, Jess, there'll be someone somewhere out there who likes what you look like.
Horrible. I think it comes back to, as well, this idea of fear. There is kind of... The big thing that I would like to see change in this industry, and I think it might change, it's going to change a little later than a lot of things, but the thing I would like to see change is this culture of fear. And when I say culture of fear, what I mean is somebody afraid to hold integrity for fear that it will impact their professional lives. Not talking about anything else, I'm talking about the fear of having integrity, the fear of calling something out and saying, can you explain why that's a thing to me? People are afraid of explaining why it's a thing because they don't have a good enough reason. People don't have a good enough reason to why, you know, I mean, all of the things that have been said to you, all of the things that have been said to me, you know, you say it to somebody outside of the industry and they go, well, why did they say that? And you kind of go, I've not even questioned that before. I've just accepted that they have a right to say that to me, and it's founded in their experience. Therefore, it must be correct. It doesn't have to be correct. And we can ask how it's incorrect. So when you say no, when you say, or you not even say no, when you question something, and I have a little story around this, it doesn't necessarily involve me, but I've questioned everything whilst I was at drama school, and it didn't go down too well. But when you question something, not only are you sort of putting yourself in a quote unquote bad position, you are then socially in this weird situation where you're seen as difficult to work with. And that is from your peers as well. So quite often it's a lone voice, and being a lone voice is, oh my gosh, it's horrendous. It's so horrendous. It impacts your ability to do your job to the best of your ability, because everyone around you is so afraid of the fact that you've just gone, hang fire, what?
I must admit, like, probably one of my biggest regrets in terms of my time training was that I didn't question things. And it was again, and it was because of that fear. It was the fear of being labelled, you know, difficult, of them not wanting to give me certain things. Like, I was like, I'm paying all this money, I want to, you know, have decent roles, I want to have a good standing at like getting into the industry. And so I really didn't question anything. They turn around and they say, yeah, if you're over a size 10, then, you know, you've got to either lose weight. And I'd be like, okay, I got to lose some weight then. Like, I didn't question anything. And I look back on that now, because me now, I mean, Zoe, you've known me for a very long time. You've known me for a very, very long time. I think me now is very different from me when we first met. I think I was a lot quieter. And I think it's only over the last few years, probably since leaving uni, that I've kind of come into my own a bit more, and I'm a bit more like ballsy with going, no, I'm not standing for that, I don't agree with that, you know. And so when I look back at my time training, I really do think, oh wow, I kind of just rolled with it, and I let them say whatever they wanted.
And well, you do, because it's a survival technique. And I wouldn't ever put anybody down who was in that situation and kind of goes, I don't want to get involved in that. Because honest to God, if I could be one of those people that doesn't want to get involved in it and walk away, I would much rather be that person. I really would. And I think, yeah, it's a coping mechanism. I heard of a situation in a drama school, in a very, very well-respected drama school in the city, and an individual questioned why you just said, this seems pointless to me, and I'm struggling to get anything from it. And as a result, completely ostracized, you know, and wasn't even calling out something that somebody might consider to be taboo. They were just pushing back a little bit, or applying a little bit of pressure. And they were, people refused to work with them. They were seen as sort of this outsider. And I don't like that. I don't like that at all, because that's not an inclusive industry. And I do think that that permeates through drama. First of all, it's born at drama school, where you're given these tutors who have this precedent and have this experience. You must bow down to them, and you must accept what they tell you, because what they tell you is gospel. And then you go and you go into the industry, and you have sort of these crazy age differences of people who have always done it, and so it's the right way, and you're just starting out, so you've got to listen, and all the kind of bits and pieces. And what that does is it leads to this unaccountable industry. Those wider issues that permeate, they're so difficult to change in terms of this, in terms of casting, in terms of the way we view female bodies, in terms of the way that we treat people individually on set, people who have protected characteristics on set. You know, we don't treat them well enough. And it's kind of a minefield, and there's kind of no way to change it, except if individuals take responsibility for themselves and speak up. But if you speak up, just remember, you will be ostracized. Like, you can see, like,
this is a vicious circle.
Yeah, this is how we're at the point that we're at. And because it's such a difficult industry, people sort of predicate their decisions based on what's easier, what's going to make my life easier in this moment. It's going to make an exec's life easier to cast the size zero, or definitely size zero in America, but maybe size 2, 4, 6 over here in the main role, rather than blah, blah, blah. And for me as well, like, this also translates into queer bodies, like sort of a non-conforming body, a non-conforming sexuality is chosen not to be cast as that identity, because it's more palatable and it's easier to get on board with if you add some little bit of heteronormativity into the mix with a visual idea, you know, that kind of stuff. People are doing what is easier because they want to make the money, and they want to ensure that they're going to make the money, because everything is so precarious all of the time.
It's a difficult one to fully grasp what people want to see on screen, right? And I did a survey because I was trying to get as much information from people as possible. We'll go through a couple of the questions here. But one of the questions I asked was, do you agree with the following statement? There is a lack of body size diversity in film and TV. And 42.9% of the respondents strongly agreed. 35% just agreed. And there was 7.1% that strongly disagreed. And the other 14% were smack bang in the middle. So it's clear that there is a collection of people who don't think it's an issue, but it's also clear that there is a collection of people who really do. It's worth pointing out that, you know, my scope of people responding will have come from my own social medias and from people sharing it from my own social medias. And obviously I'm going to attract people onto my social media who have probably a pretty similar way of thinking to me. It's always worth pointing that out. And I also asked, like, would you like to see more representation of different body shapes and sizes in film and TV? And 82.1% said yes, and 17.9% said that they weren't bothered either way. No one said no. It was either yes or I don't really care.
Stuart Lee has this great line. He delivered a lecture on writing to his alma mater, to Oxford. And in it, he says, the thing that people don't tell you is you can get things in by stealth. Because that is there is this kind of apathy. And it's not until you try something or you put something in or you make the bold choice or you take the risk will people know whether or not they like it or not. Because guess what? They've never seen it before. And they've probably not got a strong opinion either way. And then they'll see it and they'll think, great, fantastic.
And I think that's something, I mean, in reference to the three films that were discussed in part one, we had Bridget Jones's Diary, Dumplin', and Good Luck to You, Leo Grande. If I take Good Luck to You, Leo Grande, I think that is a film that really kind of went full pelt with this idea of, like, the way that women view their bodies. It's, you know, it's an older woman, it's from the perspective of, like, how her own perception of her own beauty and her body and how that plays into her sex life. But it played it so well, in my opinion, that it really got into this idea of, like, stripping that back and going, okay, well, why do you feel like this? Like, what's the reason? And it was something that I had not really seen on screen.
Yeah, and, like, ironically, I think we need more apathy when it comes to female bodies. There's sort of this idea that it's not about necessarily feeling like you look fantastic. I would love, you know, how I'm making my body look, not to factor in decisions like what kind of swimwear I wear. I would love for the swimwear to be swimwear that I love and not whether or not it makes my body look a certain way or not. You know, I'm not talking necessarily about feeling confident in your body or feeling confident in yourself, and those are two different things, by the way. I'm talking about the visual not feeling like it needs an A star, you know?
Yeah. And this is the idea of body neutrality. It's, you know, this idea that your body is a body. It functions.
We talk about that in relation to costume fittings as well. I don't know about you, but I friggin' hate costume fittings because I am not thinking about whether or not this is the right costume for the character. I am thinking about whether or not I will look big on stage or on film.
Oh my God.
Hashtag confession.
Just being honest, guys. No, but it's so true. It's like when I did an advert and went to the costume fitting, and there was you know, a variety of different things that they gave me. One thing didn't fit, one thing did. I tried it on, and the outfit they chose was perfect for the character. Yeah. Perfect. But it was like this sort of big jumper. This big jumper in these leggings, because it was set in the 80s. And I literally the first thought was, oh my God, this is going to make me look fat on screen.
I know, right?
Which is so stupid because it was perfect for the character. It was perfect. Literally the most perfect costume you come up with. The hair was perfect. Everything was perfect for the character. But my immediate, like, and this is vanity. This is completely my own vanity coming into play, which I don't think I'm fully to blame for. I think that's just, you know, society and everything. But it is completely vanity from an actor's perspective that is the thought. And I hear so many actors in interviews say that they refuse to look at, you know, when, that playbacks and stuff on the monitors because they don't want to watch their performance and then go into the next take and be like, if I just lift my chin slightly.
I know, right?
And it's so difficult because it is ingrained in you from such a young age, not even just for this industry, for like life in general, from the things you see on TV, the books you read, everything. It's so ingrained in you from such a young age, and particularly when you're training and then you get out into the industry, that you're just like, I've got to look good at all angles. And it's like, you're a human being, like, calm down. And costume fittings are naturally kind of slightly uncomfortable situations because you're trying on things, like you're reminded of the time you're in the changing room at New Look and something doesn't fit.
Oh my God.
You're just like, it's that weird sensation because you go out and you go, oh yeah, this didn't fit, and you're like, oh sorry,
therefore I failed, it's my fault. Hi.
Yeah, that's what it feels
and I wonder,
like
I am gonna hazard a guess that almost everybody feels like that to a certain extent. Like, vanity cannot be removed to the fact of this profession because you are in some ways considering your body in such minute detail. Like the idea that, you know, sometimes I'm doing something and I think, huh, why am I doing that with my thumb? Like when you're in a role, you know what, you're considering your body in this kind of like really, really sort of granular lens. What is it doing for me? What is it doing for the character? Is that true? I'm not sure that is true. Why is that part of me tense? Oh, that's really weird that part of me is tense right now. Like you are thinking about this constantly, but also to the point of you're fixing your apparatus, you're putting your voice into place for whatever it needs to do in that moment. So that line between that and vanity is so thin and it's so difficult to toe. But I would say that sometimes those considerations, I would say more or less everybody has that, right? Sometimes a body in a space is political. And that cannot be denied. Just the existence of a certain body in a certain space becomes a political statement. There is a greater conversation outside of the body itself and the vanity and or lack of vanity that that body is experiencing holds, you know?
Because I did want to pose the question, do you feel that your body image has been affected by being in this industry?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Do you think that had you not been an actor, you wouldn't feel it as much as you do?
I don't know if I wouldn't feel it as much as I do, but as I said before, there are certain cyclical conversations I have with myself, which are, if you want to be this, you should look like this, that I don't think I would have if I wasn't an actor.
It's so heavily linked, or at least that's what people say is, it's heavily linked to the roles that you get. So I always wonder, would my body image be better if I wasn't an actor? One, we'll never know. On a grand scheme of things, probably not, because this is a bigger issue. It's not just this industry, right? But I don't think I necessarily would be as concerned.
No.
Because ultimately, I wouldn't feel like it was affecting my career.
Also, that your talent, I know that sounds really weird, but I sometimes equate my ability to do the job with my body.
Interesting. Because I don't.
Do you not?
No, I have never. This is going to make me sound like a narcissistic twat, and I do apologize to people, but I have never doubted my talent. Like, I know I can act. Sometimes I doubt my singing ability, but that's just my general nerves. But I don't doubt that I have the skill set. I know, and so, and I think part of this is because of a very early experience I had. My second ever professional audition, and I rocked up to this. It was for a cruise ship, and I went along. I knew based on like stuff that people had said to me when I was training that I was not a cruise ship girl. But it was for a singer. It wasn't for a dancing role. It was for a singing role. And I thought, I'll go along. It's an open call. You don't really get open calls in the UK, for any American listeners. You don't really get open calls in the UK unless they're for cruise ships or they're just kind of some kind of
like publicity stunt.
Yeah. Those are the only times that you really get like open calls. Yeah, so yeah, yeah. I went along to this because I didn't have an agent at the time, and I just thought to myself, yeah, I'm just going to go to this audition, get some audition experiences.
See how it experience. Feels.
And yeah, just kind of see. And I queued for like 4 hours, as you do. And I got into the room and I walked in, and this woman who was on the panel, she turned, yeah. She looked at me. She looked me up and down. She sighed. And then she went, "And what's your name?" And I hadn't even said hello. And I knew in that moment that I wasn't getting it, because she'd looked at me. Mm. She decided that I didn't look like what she wanted. We'd been asked to prepare like 16 bars of a song, which is already not a lot. And then I think I sang 8, and then she was like, "That's all, thank you." And I collected my sheet music, and the pianist looked at me like, "Oh, I'm really sorry." And I walked away from that audition, and I was like, okay. So they, and this is where it becomes really difficult when I talk about like drama schools and the way that they talk about people's bodies and beauty and how that will affect their careers, because I was like, in that moment, I was like, well, they weren't wrong. Because I knew I'd gone in there and I'd sung it, the song, well. You know, maybe there were bound to be people who were more talented than me. I'm not saying I was the most talented person there. I would never say that. But I was like, okay. They didn't even wait to see if what I sounded like when I sang. They didn't even wait for me to open my mouth to say hello. She made the decision based purely on what I looked like. And I was like, right, okay. That is just something that we have to deal with. And I've taken that through the rest of my career, my auditions, and I'm fully aware of that. So when people turn around and they say, "Oh, she doesn't quite look right," I don't think it's a cop-out. I don't think it's a cop-out excuse. I understand that that probably is the exact excuse. It's not necessarily because I'm shit. It's that. But it's a double-edged sword, because as much as I have that awareness, I also have this awareness that so much of what I'm going to be able to do and be cast in is based in my exterior.
Talking about those things, like what people are saying, I've just gone onto Spotlight. And I have gone on to maybe the 10th role on my page. Ready? Is stunningly beautiful. With model looks. Do you not think that's just like that's on my first page?
I saw a casting call for a short film recently, and the description of the character was just, you know, normal everyday girl, and it was like, ideally the actor will be skinny. And I was like, I understand that casting directors have a bit of a difficult time with this. They have very little say, really. They bring certain people in, and then the final choice for most parts, especially lead roles and stuff, will go to the producers and the executives. And so you see stuff come out and you just go, well, it's who do you blame here?
Yeah,
because I find a lot of people point the finger at casting teams, and I actually genuinely think that's unfair, because I think it's their decision. I think probably there's a lot of them that sit there and go, Jesus Christ, like,
what the hell
you've
is
said
this?
Why do I have to say that she has to? Why does she have to be stunningly beautiful? What does that bring to the role? Mm. There's probably plenty of people plenty of times they think that. So I don't think it's fair to blame casting teams. And I'm almost certain that a lot of casting teams, based on just like interviews I've read with different casting directors, I'm almost certain that like they will question things as well. They will ask, why do you need that? Or they'll bring in certain people, and then when they're like, oh, we don't really like them, they'll ask why. Like, we think they're the best actor of the bunch. Like, why don't you like them? So I think that they are probably, realistically, I think a lot of actors feel like casting directors are the enemy. And I think that actually they're not, probably the people who are advocating for us the most.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating because you sit there and you have all these, like when you're an agent, you sit there, you have all these amazing clients and you're like, they're all so good and they could act rings around this role, and then they're not even getting a look in. And that's where it becomes super frustrating.
Well, here's what's really interesting as well. I read Stunningly Beautiful and I assumed they want somebody very small for the role. It's an assumption I make, and that's within me. You know, I would never put up for myself up for a role that specified beautiful, because I would not classify myself as small enough to be considered that. Like, that's the issue, right? And if I think that, who else? You know, you got to back yourself. And I do think I'm quite good at backing myself, but I can't shake that thought. And I think until we start putting things in place and forcing people to shake that thought, we won't change this kind of situation that we're in, which is equating the female form with its ability to bring sexual pleasure to men, and then within that, everything else that brings.
And it's one of those things where I sit there and I go, what can we do to change this industry? And it's such a difficult question to answer, because it is that. Yeah. It's this idea that, okay, if you see that, put yourself up for it. If you're self-represented, put yourself up for it. But then, great, self-represented people are there putting themselves up for everything. Where, you know, being like, yeah, I'll put myself up for that, I'll put myself up for that, you know. One, people who are self-represented, I think there's part of it where you're like, oh, I don't really want to waste my time, because if I'm not waste my time on putting together my submission to then be told, or not be told anything, but, you know, this not even be called in, and you know realistically that you're not going to be, so it's like, why do I even bother? But also, like, agents, when you're working as an agent, and I know this from my own experience, you have all your stuff, you know that the casting director is only looking at the headshot really, and then the one line that you send on Spotlight. So Spotlight, again, for any American listeners or anybody who just doesn't know the industry, Spotlight is the big casting website. If you want to be an actor in the UK, you kind of need to be on Spotlight. There's also websites like Mandy and Star
Was
Now.
It Star Now? What's the other one? Backstage? I think that's quite American, isn't it?
Backstage is quite American, but they're slowly coming over to the UK as well.
Yeah.
So those are the websites, but the main big one, the one that's kind of got the monopoly is Spotlight.
And it used to be linked with Equity, didn't it? So you got your Equity card and therefore you were part of the Spotlight directory. Is that right?
I think so. Maybe that was not
too young. We're too young.
That was before our time, babes. That was before our time.
But
you have to be part of. And when on Spotlight, when you submit yourself for something, you select the headshot that you want to send to the casting director, and there's a little box where you can put in just a few words. And the basic advice is that you just put in some kind of like descriptors of yourself or what you can play, reference you know, a showreel scene that they can find on your Spotlight page, and then that kind of be it. So that's all that the casting director's seeing, and they're seeing the tiny little thumbnail because they get all of the submissions
in a sea of faces. Many faces.
You're just like blending into everything, and it's really difficult to stand out. So a lot of with agents, when you know that fact and you're putting people up for it, you realistically, you only put up people that you know have the best chance of getting in the room, because also you don't want to be seen as the agency that just puts everybody up for everything, because
you don't
casting directors will just not will not send stuff to them. So they want to be seen as like knowing the industry, understanding the industry. So they only put up certain people. So it's like, realistically, it's like, who can actually push the envelope a little bit? Like who is actually able to do that?
It would be interesting to have a conversation with both an agent and a casting director and sort of ask them about their tactics. I mean, I don't necessarily know, you know, how people would work it, but I would assume when agents are putting people up, they put people that are right and ready for that role. But then I imagine what they'll probably also do is put a wild card. You know, and you know, I have spoken to a couple of casting directors in my time, and that's how, you know, a good casting director will give a team what they want whilst also, like we said before, getting things in by stealth and putting wild cards in there and sort of offering them people that, you know, you wouldn't traditionally. And that's what's the beauty of a casting director, right? Is because a casting director offers a new perspective outside of the immediate creative production team. And they have an incredible opportunity. And I do think you're right. I think casting directors are, you know, a fantastic casting director is invaluable in the process of making work, absolutely invaluable, and it's a crime that they aren't recognized in the way that everybody else is at this point.
Yeah, it's they like you said, they offer new perspectives. I've listened to plenty of interviews where casting directors have said that they always put like their little wild card in to kind of maybe just break away from what they were originally thinking, but they saw this person, they think, oh, they're actually perfect for it, like you need to see them. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, and sometimes that generally does result in people getting cast in roles that they weren't necessarily the exact descriptor for. And I just think that casting directors generally are like fighting the good fight, and I think sometimes because people view them as the gatekeepers to the industry, and I'm like, I don't actually think that's true. I think it's really interesting what you said earlier about how this issue in particular is kind of intertwined with every other diversity issue, and how realistically when they fix that, it will be a trickle down effect where this will also be fixed as well. And I will be the first to admit I have never thought of it like that, and that is changed the way I view it. And I think to myself, actually, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Yeah, I hadn't. Ultimately, body image and size diversity on screen is something that is relevant across all genders, all race, all sexualities, all gender identities. So I, you know that, but it's not a separate issue in itself. I think arguably maybe it's because it's treated like a separate issue that the uptake is slow.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it? Like, I think the issue of size on screen is kind of commodified a little bit as an easy fix rather than looking at those bigger issues. Looking at why, you know, racially diverse bodies on screen, you know, will automatically present a different type of body on screen in so many different ways. And I'm not necessarily the person to talk to that, but, you know, that is a conversation that is ongoing. Why, you know, and I think it's beautifully done in lots of different things. Also, like class, you got to remember, like, class dictates body in such a huge way. And I think a fantastic representation of this is Precious, the film Precious. You know, lots of different things, so many different things come into that. But I think this sort of, when we talk about female bodies on screen, that, yeah, that's definitely, there is a larger political conversation there. And I think that is one of misogyny, and I think that's one of ingrained institutional sexism. they're huge, they're big. And until we stop seeing bodies as commodities, we won't change anything.
When I look at West End shows or just shows in general, you know, there's not many plus size people in West End shows, no. unfortunately. And when they are, they're playing very particular roles. And and this is kind of within the musical theatre realm. Forgive me for straying away from the usual film chat for a moment. but musical theatre.
One of your babies.
Musical theatre is what I originally trained in. And I have a big love for musical theatre, but it is one of those things where it's like, okay, these are the roles that you can play. And that's what it feels like. It feels like you're given a list of roles that you can play. And it's like you can be Madame Thénardier in Les Mis. Mm-hmm. You can play, if you're younger, you can play Martha in Heathers. You can play Tracy Turnblad. And those mm-hmm. are sort of like the list that you're given. I've seen recently, not in West End productions, but I've seen it in a couple of regional productions of Hairspray, the role of Tracy Turnblad would be played by a thin woman in a fat suit.
No!
Yeah,
I've seen that. Oh, God.
I saw it more in like the States than I have in the UK. I don't want to say particular productions, but I saw like random regional productions that post stuff on TikTok, and you'll be like, smart. That's a thin woman in a fat suit, and you can just tell that that's a thin woman in a fat suit. And this happens all the time as well in like the film world as well. The roles that are for people who are bigger are played by people in fat suits. But we really do have to discuss fat suits for a moment, because it is something that grinds my fucking gears. I cannot stand it when someone is, when a thin actor is put in a fat suit, because I sit there and I go, just hire a plus size actor, just hire a fat actor. Fat suit, they drive me up the wall. It really, really bugs me, because usually I find that it is used in a way to make a stereotypically attractive woman uglier, and I use that in quotation marks, because that is the way it's presented. And that's with the whole thing, it's that's when actors gain weight as well. Mm-hmm. We see that in the response to Renee Zellweger gaining weight in Bridget Jones's Diary, this idea of, oh my God, look at how she bounced back, like this whole thing where when realistically Girly is not that big in that film at all.
Oh,
like,
my
come
God.
On. It's so infuriating. And then Renee Zellweger then later on went on to wear a fat suit in The Thing About Pam, because she refused to gain weight. Fine. You know what? Because the yo-yoing of
it's hard.
Weight is bad.
Dangerous
for your
as well.
And I thought about it in reflection of the film Matilda. So very recently,
interesting.
They had and the reason I thought about this is because it's the musical version of Matilda, the film version that's just come out, stars Emma Thompson. Emma Thompson plays the lead role in Good Luck to You, Leo Grande. So we're bringing it back. Mm-hmm. We're rolling it back. And in Good Luck to You, Leo Grande, it's all about accepting your body, right? It's all about looking, you know, really embracing what you've got. And in Matilda, she wears a fat suit. Now, the reason she wears a fat suit, if you ignore the original film with Pam Ferris in it, ignore that for a second. The stage production of Matilda the musical, the character is usually played by a man who they then put into a fat suit. And they put this man into this fat suit, and they make him look as stereotypically ugly as they possibly can, right?
Yeah.
Bad teeth, warts on face, scraped back greasy
all
hair.
Of it.
And then the addition of that is that they are wearing this very exaggerated fat suit. That is not dissimilar to what is portrayed in the film version. So stylistically, I see why that choice was made based on the stage show.
But do you think we're there? Like, I have this conversation a lot, like, and this is a thing I feel about Promising Young Woman, which is a completely different conversation, but I'm going to bring it in anyway. there are some things, I think, as individuals who are making things for entertainment now, I'm going to use the phrase entertainment, we do have a kind of responsibility to be conscious in what we are putting under the guise of entertainment. Do you see what I mean? And so, for example, some things we will laugh at in 10 years time, you know, maybe we don't laugh at right now. And like, and maybe some things that we used to laugh at, we don't laugh at anymore. And I think we have to be really conscious of our role in society as a whole and what we are putting out there and what potentially our words, films, shows, what they will do to the larger audiences than just, but I can defend this decision. There are two different things here, and I'm not quite sure at the point where the fat suit is okay at all.
Yeah, this is the thing that I find, and it is exactly what you just said. It's this idea that people laugh at things, right? They'll look at like Miss Trunchbull in Matilda and they'll laugh and they'll be like, look how disgusting she is. And the way she's presented, you go, okay, so she's disgusting because what? Like,
blah, blah,
her
blah.
Personality. Yeah. Okay, yeah, her personality is pretty shit. But then it's because of realistically what people are laughing at is what she looks like. And that's frustrating to see. And I find it especially infuriating if you take away, like, if we ignore something like Matilda, where it's a big caricature, right? You take something like, there was the recent, it was a while ago now, but the American Crime Story that was about,
the Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah, the Monica Lewinsky one. And you have Beanie Feldstein in that, but you have Sarah Paulson, who is an actor that I absolutely adore. And she was put in a fat suit. She was, you know, given a fake nose and all of this to play this role. And the role that she was playing was not even like a plus size role. Like, you actually look at her in that.
No. Really?
Google it. Google
it. Okay, we're going on. Sarah Paulson.
In American Crime Story.
Was it called Impeachment or something like that?
Something like that.
Okay.
Yeah, Impeachment. Okay,
right. Why was she put in... Who's the individual she's playing? Linda Tripp.
Yeah. So she's been put in this fat suit, and the character isn't, like... She's not super skinny. She's not a super skinny character. But she's not... there is no need. I'm looking at a picture of her right now. There are so many actors out there who are this size.
Yeah.
So many. And this calls back to this idea that, like, actors love to transform themselves, right? We feel like we're not ourselves. And I completely understand that. But there has to come a point where a responsibility has to be taken, and you have to look at the roles that you're being offered and go, this could genuinely go to someone who is of this size, who could play this role. And then I think sometimes actors need to take a step back and go, because we all just want to work, right? And I'm just kind of like rambling at this point, I'm so sorry, but we all just want to work, and so we'll take whatever jobs are offered. And particularly people who are in positions of more power in this industry, people who are more famous, who have more standing in the industry, they really need to be the ones to turn around and go, you know what? No. I'm not going to put that fat suit on. You're going to find an actor who is the right size. And you know what? Maybe they'll go to the next skinny actor and that person will put on the fat suit. But at least at that point, they know that they've held up their integrity, as you were saying
earlier. Like, you can only ever really be accountable for yourself, and the manner that where you can be accountable for yourself is you can behave in the manner that you deem to have the most integrity, and you can also be vocal in that environment about what you see is going on, but only you can do that. And I do think there is a point where you can only do that to a certain degree, where it's okay for your mental health, and then it becomes bad for your mental health. And it's really about striking that balance, isn't it? Of, okay, I'm here, I'm accountable, I am holding my integrity to this standard. But funnily enough, the longer an actor goes without a job, the more their integrity slips.
No, it's true.
You can probably do it as one of like those scales.
Mm-hmm. But you sit there and you just because people just want to work, and this is why I find it really difficult to. I don't want to put the whole blame on actors. I don't want to put the whole blame on anyone. It's not really like the blame kind of exists above us, but
yeah.
And so it's really difficult when I see actors taking on these roles. I just think to myself, you know what? It annoys me that you didn't stand by that integrity, but. If you need work, you need work. And that's where it becomes really difficult. It's this weird balancing act because this industry is so, like, it's so oversaturated. There's so many people and you're just, like, you're fighting against things constantly that it just becomes this, like, never-ending cycle of, like, okay, I'm just going to take anything I can get because you feel like you need credits. And it's so difficult. And that's why when I see things like this, you know, like the Sarah Paulson in the fat suit and all that, it annoys me, but then I'm also like recognizing that that fear that people have of never working again, that never goes away. I don't blame people for it. It's just like at some point someone has to, well really everyone has to take responsibility.
Yeah,
and go, you know what, if we want things to be a bit fairer, then we have to force it to be fairer. Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Anyway, gosh, it's such a huge one, isn't it? It is a huge one. It's kind of crazy. Here we are.
I have noticed over the last few years that there has been a genuine shift in the films that are coming out. The way that people are presented on screen, I am genuinely seeing change. It's slow. Don't get it twisted. It's happening. Slow, but it is happening. So when we have these discussions and we talk about our own frustrations, it's not please, please, please to anyone listening. It's not hopeless by any means. I think Good Luck to You, Leo Grande is a perfect example of this, of a film that really represents this and shows this slowly shifting mindset. And I think that it will only continue to shift as long as we all maintain that.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable, the TV series was one of the big ones that made me go, ha ha, something's changing here.
Is that the one with Merritt Weaver and...
With Merritt Weaver, that's exactly right.
I love her.
And it was Merritt Weaver's role.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fantastic. I know it's problematic. Red flag. So I'm going to preface this with a red flag. Red flag, but Girls changed my perspective about who could be on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, Girls, the TV show, isn't necessarily problematic. The comments that are made around it are. What else have I watched and I thought, wow, that could be me. You know, that feeling is so singular.
Yeah, I've seen, and you know, recently we see more and more plus size actors just playing characters rather than playing fat
shocker
people,
you know shocker
but yeah, you're right, more and more. I mean, I think that a lot of them came up from playing like these comedy characters where they were the butt of the joke.
Oh,
but we
Shrill, for example.
Yeah.
And do you know what I want to say about this? Hold each other up. The thing I love so much about Dumplin'. And again, some things I was like, ooh, okay. The influence that drag has in that film in terms of that kind of like affirmation and acceptance of yourself. Kind of mad, incredible. And so like that's one community to another holding each other up, you know? And it works both ways. And I think there is a certain amount of... Yeah, I mean, it's just boring, isn't it? Like, better together, isn't it?
Yeah. Literally.
Better together.
Allow that diversity in. Allow yourself to work with people you've never worked with before, because guess what? When you are feeling uncomfortable in the situation, that's when you're going to do your best work. You're going to do your best work when you are thinking about how you're working. You're thinking about how something is coming across. When you are thinking about the wider working community as a whole, that's when the good stuff's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so this idea of getting as many different people involved in the process as possible, not just your pals, not just your family, not just people who have been recommended to you by your pals. Do the hard work. Audition people. Reach out to writers you've never met before. Reach out to directors you've never met before. You know, go to film festivals. Watch other people's films and go, oh, mate, I really liked your film. Can we have a coffee sometime? Like, that stuff is scary, but do it, because it brings so much good. So much good.
I would really love this to be an open discussion. I would love if people have other things that they want to discuss. If they want to come onto the podcast, then please just get in contact with me. As I said before, the Twitter page, Better Bad Pod, and Instagram. If you just want to like send some messages on Twitter to discuss this, and you know doesn't necessarily have to be a podcast session. It can literally just be a chat. I want this to be an open discussion. If anything can come from these last two episodes, I hope that it is that it opens up a little bit of a conversation for people. But yeah, that is our view on the industry.
And also it might change, like our view might change. You know,
thank you for joining me today in this
thank you,
very heavy discussion.
It was a big one, wasn't it?
And for bringing your own experiences forward, I really do appreciate. I know that that can be quite a vulnerable thing to do. I really do appreciate you coming on. I hope you had fun regardless of the subject.
Always have fun. Always have fun, Jess.
Always.
It's always a good one.
Are you working on anything at the moment? Is there anything you want to like plug? Feel free to.
Hi, reach out to me. If you are a filmmaker, editor, sound designer, anybody, I'm building my roster for some exciting projects that I've got coming up. Like I said before, I would love to work with people that I've never worked with before. So reach out. We'd love to hear from you. We've got some folk horror coming. We've got some gritty, surreal drama. We've got some hyper-realist stuff, including some improvisation, all on film. They're all coming down the pipe, uh-huh. And I'd love to hear from you. And then my short film, Boadicea Boudica, is being screened at the Kino Short Film Open Film Night. I don't really know. Open Mic Film Night? Mm. I'm going to go with Film Open Mic Night. That's what I'm going to go with.
But yes, thank you so much. As always, you can follow the podcast on Better Bad Pod on Twitter and Instagram. You can follow me at Jess_Rolland on Twitter, and I am Jess Rolland on Instagram. We will be back in the following weeks with more normal Better Than Bad podcast material. We have episodes about Greta Gerwig, Emma Thompson, Timothy Chalamet. Who else have I got? Melissa McCarthy's going to be coming up. Matt Nicholson. We've got people coming up. And as always, I'm always looking for guests. So if you want to discuss anyone, then drop me a little message. But for now, I will say thank you so much for everyone who stuck with us during this lengthy conversation. I hope you gained something from it. Please get in contact if you want to discuss anything else. And I will see you next time on Better Than Bad.
Next time on Better Than Bad, we will be back with our usual Better Than Bad format. I was joined by the fabulous Billy, and we discussed Greta Gerwig's highest and lowest rated films. We talked about Frances Ha and Lola Versus. So join us next time and find out what we thought.